All right, folks, welcome to another edition, or the Kieran Clark edition, I call, of the On Par Radio Show. How you guys doing? And I'm your host, Anthony Scorcia, and on the line is Kieran Clark, golfshake.com, at Kieran Clark Golf on the Twitter. Kieran, how you doing, my friend?
I'm great, Anthony. It's after midnight here in Scotland. The clocks went forward on Saturday night, so we're now in British summertime, apparently. And the weather's been okay, Easter weekend. And I actually got some golfing on Friday. I didn't play too badly. I couldn't putt, mind you, but I played quite well, surprisingly enough. And obviously enjoying watching the Match Play Championship this weekend. And Jason Day, a guy who, you know, we kind of forgot all about him 2 weeks ago, talking about Adam Scott. And now Jason Day is not only the top Aussie again, but he's number one in the world again.
Well, before we get to that, did I catch you laughing during my little intro for you? Did I catch that correctly? I you don't like my intro music or what? What's going on over there?
I love the intro music, but I'm a little bit kind of embarrassed, a bit bashful at being called the Kieran Clark edition. I'm a bit too modest for that, but I'll take what I can get.
Well, I mean, you know, the On Par Radio Show has several different personalities or iterations, if you will. So this is the Kieran Clark edition or iteration, if you will. So.
Well, that's true, but I kind of fear that the second people hear my name, they'll turn off. That's my worry.
No. They've turned off long before that. They may have this week. They may have turned off just when they heard the music. They may have thought they had
possibly, yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to do a little short and to the point podcast this week. But you mentioned him. He won last week at the Arnold Palmer Invitational in convincing fashion. Jason Day, I would say, obviously, you know, needless to say, Captain Obvious, that he's been playing well of late. But also, I would say, caught a little bit of a break with during his knockout rounds. The withdrawal of his opponent certainly helped with his recovery for his back. I'm not sure if he actually said what he what the actual ailment was. If he did, I missed it. But clearly, it was another flare up, and quite frankly, another injury to speak of. The guy's had more injuries than, as we used to say, as old timers, Carter House pills. So I think that you know, it's just I fear for the guy. I don't know how he can continue to play on. Always sort of with these ailments, and who knows, maybe he won't. But he certainly was the benefit of a withdrawal in the knockout stage that certainly helped him stay in it. And then I guess you could say fear the injured golfer took advantage of it and took care of Louis Oosthuizen, who we've spoken about before. Another name we've spoken about that has had success in recent weeks. So I know I've kind of just summarized a little bit of the last couple of weeks, but, you know, before we even get to the Jason Day and to the matches, your impressions of the golf course. I'm not a big fan of this sort of this match play, medal play, whatever kind of this edition. I'm not even a fan of this tournament, to be honest with you. I love the golf. I'm not sure we have to have this tournament. It seems a little bit forced to me, but I thought the golf course looked spectacular.
Yeah, I think it's certainly a step up in terms of the golf courses that we've had down the years for this event. You know, the courses they had down in the
Any place where it wasn't
a superior golf course to what we've had before. But the event itself, I'm frustrated by the format change to it, and I know why it's done, because of the TV there. They want the big name players to be part of it for longer, as long as possible. Obviously, the players want to be there for as long as possible. That makes perfect sense. But I think when you have a match play event, and if you're going to have a match play event, you have many of them obviously throughout the year, one or two in the calendar, then go do it properly. You know, have the first day of the match play before last year was always one of the most kind of intriguing days of the year. We had all 64 players, 32 of them went home on that first day. Yeah. Yes, of course, the event perhaps maybe lost a bit of interest after that point when a lot of the big name players were knocked out and so on. But I think when you have such a great sameness to all the events every week, we have 72 stroke play all the time. It's all the events are feel exactly the same. To have an event that was slightly different, it's a shame to me to kind of undercut that difference to the event the way it plays out. So I think the format change, it doesn't make much sense. The first 3 days, the round-robin format is unwatchably dull in respect that a guy loses a match. Well, he can come back tomorrow. What made match play so compelling and before, and what it should be, is the fact that there's massive stakes involved. You lose, you're out. And I think that's intriguing. So we've kind of lost that. So the event doesn't really start now until the weekend, when we have the last 16 and they play out from there. Then they have a sort of weird thing where when players are tied in the round-robin stage, at the end of it, they have a stroke play playoff to see who goes through. You know, what's that all about? Doesn't make any sense at all. So the event itself kind of isn't what it should be. It's disappointing in that respect. But, you know, in the end, you can say that certainly in the end, the best player was crowned, if you like. The guy is now world number one again. So I think the golf course, I like most of it. There are parts I'm not quite so sure about. I think it actually played quite well this week. I think it had different wind conditions throughout the week, so it played differently most of the days.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly a step up from what we had before.
Well, it wasn't
again,
snowing,
it's a,
so...
It's a Pete Dye design as well, so actually, yeah. Jason Day won the PGA last year at Whistling Straits, another Pete Dye course, so certainly Jason Day loved the Pete Dye designs. And, you know, certainly I like the course. Obviously, Austin, Texas, a great location for golf, a lot of history there. All the great players, Tom Kite, Ben Crenshaw, those guys there. Harry Pinnick as well, of course. So a lot of great history in golf in that area. And you know, the crowds came out in good numbers. So it was a well-dressed event, but I still think the format leaves a lot to be desired.
Well, I do. And you're right. The locale alone is a step up in the fact that it wasn't snowing. So that's definitely a benefit. And I guess you just sort of maybe more eloquently articulated my thoughts of why I don't like the tournament, and that is because it can't be done properly. And if you can't do it properly, then why do it? You know, then you really shouldn't do it. And we know, like you said, and it's not just the TV times, but you're also talking about, and I hate to say it, but golfers who are going to refuse to play because they don't want to travel.
Yeah.
They don't want to travel to be one and done. And so, you know, you can. It doesn't help their cause when you know about the spoiled golfer and all this stuff and whatever the case may be. But the truth of the matter is, and the reality of the situation is, these are very busy people, and you know, quite frankly, they could be doing a corporate outing and making whatever amount of money they could be doing or making that they, you know, the big names where they, you know, it wouldn't be, you know, cost benefit for them is not worth it. To go and play one. I mean, Phil Mickelson goes, right, he's got just him alone. Let's just take him for an example. And of course he's one of the exceptions since he has his own plane. I don't think Rory's bought his own plane yet, but so Phil's got to fire up the G5 or the G4 or whatever he's got. He's got airplane fuel costs. He's got a pilot. He's got a house he's renting. I mean, you're telling me that he can't do a corporate outing in that one day if he was going to go and lose? It seems like a lot of lost revenue for someone of his caliber. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm just saying I get it. I'm not saying that he shouldn't do the cost benefit analysis. I totally get it. My point is that if you're not going to be happy with the caliber of participants, doing it in a proper way, in the proper format that you mentioned, and then not only do you do it, but now you do it in. Despite of that, you do it in a half-baked, like you said, match play, and then medal play, stroke play, playoff. I mean, it's just it's an abomination to the idea or the spirit of match play, to be honest.
Oh, definitely, and you're right. We understand why it has been changed. You know, the players were very much in favor of the change. TV companies would have been in favor of it as well. So we understand why it's happened. But I think in the end, it's happened for the good of the TV companies and the good of the players. And it hasn't really happened for the good of us, the viewers, because it has, you know, it's undercut and undermined the format. You know, match play should be you lose, you're out. That's it. That should be the high stakes element of it is what makes it intriguing to watch. And to kind of dissipate that is really unfortunate. And that's why the first 3 days really felt just... there was nothing to watch, really. It was really uninteresting. You know, obviously, it's and that's unfortunate because the event really should be. It's funny, the event before used to be it peaked on the first day with a big 32 matches, 32 guys leaving, and that was always really exciting. Then it sort of, gradually it declined from there as there were less players playing and so on, and a lot of big names were going out. But at the same time, it was always compelling in its own way. It certainly was a unique event. You wouldn't have it every single week, but when you have it, one event a year on the PGA Tour schedule that is match play, then, as you say, you should do it properly. If you don't do it properly, then why are you doing it at all? And I think that's the most frustrating thing about it. And it does feel kind of manufactured and contrived to, again, ensure the best players are through. And it's almost a bit like the FedEx Cup in some ways as well, where you have the, kind of the artificiality of that format as well when you get towards the playoffs and the crazy point system and so on. It all kind of feels manufactured and whatever. And I understand why that's the case, but yeah. I don't think it does the game much good overall. That said, even with the any sort of format change, the final, the last match today, the final with Jason Day, Louis Oosthuizen, was just about unwatchable, not just because the quality of golf had declined from what it had been earlier, but also because Jason Day's pace of play, and it's certainly, unfortunately for Jason Day, probably the most talked about thing from his victory here. You look at Twitter, scroll through it, everyone's talking about his pace of play, how slow he's been, and taking a minute and 20 seconds to hit tee shots and so on. You know, it was outrageously slow, and I think Louis Oosthuizen just kind of fell asleep almost during that final today, and as did everybody at home, because it was almost unwatchably bad. And again, that's partly the reason why we don't have more match play on television, and indeed, of course, the PGA Championship used to have match play, it used to be entirely match play until the late 1950s, because in the end, it wasn't really suited for television, because if you're watching just two guys playing golf, playing that slowly, then it can become extremely boring, when obviously you had a big stroke play event, you get players everywhere and lots of stuff happening. So match play, in a sense, isn't ideally suited for television at all, but at the same time, if you're going to do it, as I say, you should do it properly.
I honestly, it's getting to the point where if it's not the Ryder Cup, if it's not the President's Cup, then bring back Shell's Wonderful World of Golf and just do it that way, because I just don't see, you know, and if you look at this week particular, I mean, when I was watching, I was like, you know, whatever. I'm a huge golf fan, and so. I love the game, and I'm going to watch. But if this was on in the bar, nobody's tuning in. You know, nobody's looking at this. You know, or very few people are going to be like, "Oh, what's going on in the matches?" There's no way. And the only thing that they did, the only thing that they actually kind of, and they almost didn't, was the only. And I hate to say it like this, but the good thing about it was done before the Final Four matchup, the basketball game. So, you know, you've got the NCAAs. That's a March Madness is a huge thing in the States. I don't know what it's like on your side, but on this side, it is a monstrosity of an event. And so they battled that all week. You know, I feel bad for Dell because, I mean, I'm not sure. They got their money's worth, and they got the winner that they probably wanted. Or, I mean, other than you know, a Spieth or a Rory, So they certainly got some bang for their buck for that in that regard. And so they'll have his sort of loyalty and his obligation, you know, a little bit of an obligation there, being a defending champion. But they've had a tough week between the format. And the going up against the March Madness on this side of the pond, it's been a rough one for them. And, you know, like you said, it a bit contrived on the whole format and whatnot. And like you said, manufactured or whatever, however you want to describe it. But in the end, we did get a winner, and a good one at that, if you can say that from a media standpoint in Jason Day. And he's obviously playing, awesome, and he's been his form is fantastic, and you know, he is now obviously number one, but there's a new big four now. You've got Jason Day on top of Spieth, you've got Rory, and just edging out Bubba Watson. So you know, Bubba, that's something I didn't expect. You know, he's now part of the, well, he's been a bit, but I haven't spoken to you in a while, but he's now a part of the big four and knocking out his young buck friend, Ricky Fowler. So I like this new big four. I like this four. I like this top of the world golf rankings. And I like that. And I like that Jason Day has won, for the fact that now it seems like everybody who's on the top of the world golf rankings has won already this year, for the most part. And so it makes it intriguing for people like us.
It does, absolutely. And we talk about the Big Four, Big Five, Big Six, Big Eight, whatever you want to call it. And yep. There are really, probably half a dozen guys at least who are all in the top 10 at worst in the world rankings and are all in great form. And obviously going into Augusta now, it's over a week away. That's going to increase the kind of anticipation for that even further when you have all these great players playing well. And we're almost kind of maybe guilty of perhaps building up Augusta this year, maybe more so than we would normally do. So obviously it's obviously a greatly hyped up event, given it's the first major of the year and so on, that long wait since the PGA, and obviously the great history of Augusta National and that iconic nature of it. But this year, so many guys playing well, and it's even just the guys who, obviously Jason Day, Adam Scott and Bubba are the guys who are winning the events, but even Spieth and Rory, Spieth obviously, he's kind of in and out of his form. This week as well, he played very solidly during the round robin stage of the match play, but then kind of lost his game completely against Lee Westhaven in the last 16. And so he's a big question mark there, lost his world ranking number one spot, so again, how will he go to Augusta and defend there? Obviously a big week, a lot of expectations, a lot of attention going on there, a lot of memories from last year and how he's going to carry that with him. And then Rory as well, who consistently appears to almost be breaking through and going to get a win, and then he falls short just in the end. But today he was very unlucky. He lost in the end by one hole to Jason Day, and I think he actually lost stroke play-wise, look that way, by one shot. Didn't make a single bogey in the entire day, so he played really well. And it's frustrating to me, actually, if you look at Twitter, and I'm sure people will talk about it, is that two esteemed golf media guys for many years now have almost been today completely putting Rory down and saying, his best days are behind him, essentially, and Jason Day and so on are well ahead of him, which seems extremely premature to me and somewhat ridiculous. And actually, it's Alan Shipmuck of Sports Illustrated and indeed Robert Lucetic, who used to be of Fox Sports, they're both saying this. And it just seems to be, we kind of fall, and again, you mentioned the Big Four and so on, and this is kind of the trap we fall into in this kind of 24-hour media age where we constantly, every week, we change who their favourite player, who the best player, who's the guy going down, what's the era going to be. We constantly write people off and big people up. Adam Scott was, 4 months ago he was finished, now he's one of the best players in the world again. Rory, he's the same, and Jason Day was kind of, he disappeared a month ago, and now he's back and he's world number one. So it changes so quickly, the barometer of the game right now is fluctuating so much, and that's really exciting for us to follow. But I think two people are far too quick to draw conclusions from that in so many ways. And for me, ultimately, I'm kind of old-fashioned. For me, what defines things, eras and years, are the major championships. And when we get to Augusta, for me, whoever comes out of that is the winner, whether it's Jason Day, whether it's Adam Scott, or even if it's Rory or Jordan Spieth or anyone else, that, for me, is what will set the benchmark for the year going forward. So I think we are far too quick to kind of build guys up and then knock them down again. I know it's kind of a symptom of the age we're in now with the media and social media and so on, but I think it's a trap that we're falling into too quickly and too often, and it kind of makes us look a bit stupid at times.
Well, I can't believe, let me just start with your first point, and that is for anybody, and I can't imagine anybody wrote off Adam Scott in the beginning of the thing.
What was I even talking about?
If there was a member of the media that wrote off Adam Scott, then he should have his microphone taken away from him.
I quite agree with that.
The one thing about you have to understand, and I'm not sure how much you know Alan Shipnuck, but Alan is a button presser.
And so
I don't even think he probably, I think that was purely a maybe he monitors his at mentions, and maybe he was a little low in his metrics. And so I feel like, because it seems like that's really the only reason why he would say something like that. And the other gentleman, I don't know him as well. The things I've recognized about him, I got into like a little bit of I don't think he's a big Phil fan, Robert.
All right.
I got into a little, I can't remember what tournament it was. It was a fairly big tournament that Phil, blew it towards the end, and it might have been the PGA. Was it the last year where? Yeah, wasn't it the last year when Rory won the PGA?
2 years ago,
right? And Phil, and that's when they waved Rory up, and Phil, Phil admittedly said that he kind of, he kind of not sculled, but hit that chip shot too. It was like half in the dark and he hit it too far, whatever. And yeah. Phil admitted. And anyway, I got into like a Twitter thing with Robert and Robert, because Robert
did
was
you
like,
really? Wow.
I did. Cause well, Robert's a little salty and, but he was, he was saying that, Phil blew it and blah, blah, blah. And I said, first of all, he said he choked. That's what he said. He said Phil choked. He said, well, he said he hit. I said, this is obviously on Twitter. And I wrote, he hit the shot bad. Like, it wasn't a great shot. But, it's like half dark, blah, blah, blah. But Robert just wanted to insist on he was choking, and he's like, he blew the championship. And I said, so you're assuming, and this is when you know somebody has like a little bit of a bias, and I don't care who it's for, but he's like, well, he cost him the championship. I said, so he automatically wins the championship if he gets into the playoff? Like, so Rory has nothing to say about that. And so, Robert is Robert, and so he's a little bit of a salty dog, and Alan is just a button presser. So, And I was just completely wrong about Adam Scott, but you're totally right. People are, it's that kind of a media age, and that's the world we live in. But I like the form of the top players coming into the championship. I'm not really worried about Spieth. I think he'll be fine. Listen, the bottom line is you can't. The caliber of he played the last 2 years is just absurd. And so, obviously we can go back to saying how much we appreciate Tiger Woods and what he did for that time matter, but that's for another show. So, I think we can expect a little lull, and I think we spoke about this 2 weeks ago. I think he deserves a little rope. Even if he doesn't perform, let's say, at the Masters up to par, I still think he's earned the rope for a little, it's just the nature of the game, and it's just the nature of sport, and like we said, it's a razor thin line out there. So he's got no teammates to help him pull through a game. There's no coach to come in and help him out, and it's just him. So it's mentally taxing, it's emotionally taxing, it's physically taxing. So he deserves a long, and he's also has traveled a bunch and that, catching some of those international dollars, if you will. So he still deserves a lot of rope, but I am pretty pumped up for the Masters. I'm really looking forward to it this year.
Absolutely. As always, it's always a great highlight of the season, obviously the great history of the course there, and we all recognize the images of it. It's almost like when you're watching Augusta, or I'm assuming for the guys who play there, when they're playing the course, you're almost playing through, it's kind of cheesy and corny, but you're almost playing through all that great history of the past. You think, I remember a shot that he played there, or you're standing on the 12th tee, and you think, Fred Couples, the ball stayed up, and all these great moments from the past, or Larry Mize chipping in on the 11th and so on, and it has that great... I think that's why the golf course, why that tournament is so resonates with people so much, in the sense that when we watch it, we know the golf course so well. Even casual viewers know the golf course, so it's there every single year, and it's embedded in our minds. So we're almost watching replays of the past. It's certainly watching, your favorite movie again, or a remake of it, or so on. It's constantly being re-energized and whatnot every year, and it's you're kind of replaying those moments in the past as etching new ones. And I think that's why we have a great familiarity with it, and I think that's why that event seems to have a personal kind of resonance with people more than any other golf tournament.
But what it is, Kieran? It's becoming, I'm sorry to interject just for a second, but before I forget it, it's almost like the Shawshank Redemption of golf. Because no matter what, we love it, and we go through it every time. And you're right, though. It's like you just can't turn it off. Like it's one of those movies. But I would actually take it a little further. Like you said, it's almost like your own personal memories. It's almost like watching. It's almost like watching old videos or old home videos that you watch of you as a kid, and so you're remembering all these like memories. And no other golf course can, no other tournament can recreate that, because they're not played at the same place.
That's right, and you're right there. Actually, you're not only watching it and remembering the shots that were played, but you're almost remembering your reaction to those shots.
Yeah,
And I think that's why it has a special resonance with people around the world. And you know, obviously, there's kind of a dark history to that golf club, and there's lots about it I don't like even today. But at the same time, when you get started there Thursday morning, and the Masters kicks off, and you know you're in Augusta, Georgia, you're in that place, and you're watching your history unfold. And that golf course itself, as an entity, you know, has a great kind of cinematic quality in respect of every hole. It seems to like it's almost a chance of greatness and a chance of disaster. So much excitement on every single hole, and I think that's why. It's almost like the most thrilling golf course to watch in golf, certainly the back nine, indeed. And it's just, it is, so many great things came together there to build, you know, almost like the perfect golf tournament in so many ways. And that's why it draws in every April. And, of course, now only a week away from it. And like you, I'm so pumped up for it. Not just because it's the Masters, it's great every year, but it's because of all the guys who are going in and playing so well. You know, we're really, you know, set up for hopefully, potentially, fingers crossed, we have at least two or three of those guys up there competing on Sunday. If we have that, then it's going to be an absolute blast.
Yeah, I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree more. I think it's, you know, just to your point, they just ran another article about Gene Sarazen's Albatross, right, on the 15th.
Yeah.
So people can't get enough of it. And it's one of those tournaments that, where the event itself can, it just makes you, it just takes over. People are so hungry for golf. We're so hungry for a major. We're so hungry for that back nine. And we're so hungry to make new memories, as you said. And we want it so bad that we just ignore. You just have to ignore all the other stuff. Like you said, the sort of the dark shadow, which is pretty dark, that sort of looms in the background. But the golf is so pure. The excitement is so rich that it makes it easy to sort of put that, you know, put it to the side, and we just, you know, you just revel in the in everything that is Augusta, and you're watching it online, and you're watching it in your house, and you're watching it on your computer or on your mobile device. Nobody can do it better than the Masters. It's just what it is. It's just but when it starts, I hate for it to start because I hate for it to end. But, Kieran, I think that buzz is out of time. We got to go, man. But thank you. Thank you for another edition of the On Par podcast, the Kieran Clark edition of the On Par podcast.
Always.
And we'll catch up with you next week, my friend.
All right. Cheers, Anthony. Thanks.
Cheers, pal.